One of the biggest risks in travel today isn't where you're going, but assuming travel is still working the way that it used to. Yeah, flights, they get canceled for reasons that we definitely couldn't have imagined 10 years ago. Routes are disappearing overnight as airlines start shifting the capacity. Weather events are shutting down entire regions for days, not hours. Political and economic shifts are starting to influence where people feel comfortable or unwelcome while traveling. And yet, Canadians are still traveling. They're just doing things a little bit differently. Today, we're going to be chatting about how travel has changed, some of those major pivots Canadians are making, and how to go confidently in a world where travel feels a little more volatile, but also more intentional than ever. Welcome to Blueprint to Benefits. Each year, Blue Cross actually conducts a national travel study to better understand how Canadians are traveling, what they're worried about, and what's influencing their decisions. The 2026 findings were pretty telling. Not because people stopped traveling, but because how and why they travel has changed in meaningful ways. We're going to reference some of those insights throughout today's discussion. To help unpack this, I am joined by two subject matter experts, Larissa and Amanda. They're our product trainers. They're going to bring some complementary perspectives to this conversation, where they bridge real-world traveler experiences and conversations, as well as internal insights into traveler behavior, the planning, and the risk. I'll guide the conversation, and you'll hear from Larissa and Amanda as we move through each one of these themes.
Thanks for kicking us off there, Lindsay. Travel is one of those things that people think they understand until something actually goes sideways. So I'm excited to just have a bit of an open and honest conversations, because this is where expectations and reality often collide.
Yes, thanks, Lindsay, for the introduction. Especially as someone who's traveling this year with both kids and extended family, these trends, they're not just things we see or hear on a page or in the news. They're actually things that we experience and have to adapt to in real life time and change how we plan to accommodate for these changes.
How about we start with the big picture? Because research is showing that Canadians still want to travel, but their comfort levels have kind of shifted. So where do you see Canadians being a little more hesitant or starting to rethink travel the most right now?
The travel industry has always been something that, you know, always has a bit more risk or volatility to it, right? It's outside of our home borders. But what we're actually seeing the biggest shift in, most notably in the last 2 years, is the shift around traveling to the U.S., our closest neighbor and our most frequent common international travel destination as Canadians. Historically, this has really been the default international destinations that Canadians choose to travel to. Especially, I find, for us Saskatchewan residents, we have a large snowbird population that likes to get out of the winter. We're in the depths of it right now. We're feeling it. People are wanting to get away. And that relationship has traditionally been really strong. But considering the relations with our closest neighbor, it's really caused a lot of travelers to pause and reassess. And I mean, we don't need to get into the logistics. I think we can all appreciate that it's not driven by one single issue. Things are really quite layered and complicated. Political tensions, talks of tariffs, annexation, the borders have become unpredictable. There's a lot more perceived friction across our relations. There's just a broader sense of uncertainty exists. This is showing up in the data as well. These aren't just conversations that we're having or assumptions. It's actually found that only 17% of Saskatchewan travelers are planning to travel to the United States this year. But that doesn't mean that Saskatchewan travelers aren't traveling at all. That's really far from the case. It's just that of those Saskatchewan travelers, about 77% of them are just rerouting their destinations. But 95% of those travelers, they're not stopping travel altogether. Like, pretty much all of them are still looking to travel. We haven't lost that appetite or that desire to explore. What people are really doing this year are starting to get more intentional, and they're just starting to ask better questions. Questions like, where do I feel welcome? Where does my dollar go further? The Canadian dollar has been under significant pressure, just not in the US region. It's other regions internationally as well that are making people rethink about how they're investing their time. And I mean, the world is complicated. We live busy lives. The external world is loud and people are really looking for solutions. Like, what's easiest right now? What's easiest as far as systems? What feels familiar? Where's reduced risk, uncertainty? Key takeaway, they're not staying home. We're just redirecting. But it's important that we have this conversation because in that redirection of intention, this shifts everything to do with travel. From those common air flight routes that we're used to, it makes us plan and consider our timelines a little bit differently, budget considerations. And of course, it's affecting how people think about how they're protecting their trips.
Canadians, they're thinking more carefully, obviously, about where and why they're traveling in 2026. You're talking about some of these redirections. One of the clearest redirections that we see right now is domestic travel. Mm-hmm. So what's driving that shift?
Well, Lindsay, with that shift, the difficulties we're seeing for those trips down to the States, we're actually starting to see a rebound of wanting to stay just within our borders. It's easier. It's right there in our backyard. We're not avoiding travel. It's just we're realizing that we can stay here where it's easier. We have the same dollar. We understand the same language. We know what we're walking into with our different neighbors on either side of our provinces. So let's see what we have to offer in areas that maybe we haven't discovered before. Travelers are actually being drawn towards, yes, it's familiar, lesser unknowns of how am I going to cross the border? What's it going to be of experience? Less paperwork. As Canadians, we never had to worry about visas or entry fees or entry information. We just showed our passport and went across the border. It was all good. Not quite the same anymore. We're experiencing more hassles to try and even explore the neighbors next to us. And in that, starting to plan shorter cycles that we can see more destinations without having to do those big, long trips. One of those other experiences we're seeing is the push by the government to help introduce incentives to stay within Canada. One of the biggest incentives that was actually held last year, it's going to continue again this year, is the Canada Strong Pass. This Canada Strong Pass opens up our regional and national parks and different cultural areas within the country to experience more of what Canada has to offer. Railway trips by via rail are being offered as either free trips for kids or discounted trips for adults. National parks offer free entry or discounted entry, discounts on overnight stays for those camping areas to help entice people to maybe stay overnight, experience a little bit more than just day trips. Museums and galleries are also offering free admission for kids and youth and discounted for adults to experience more of what we have within our country to offer. Now, the cool thing with this Canada Pass is you actually don't even have to sign up for anything at all. You can go to the Government of Canada's website to learn more. But what you have to do if you ever want to benefit from this pass is just go visit those museums, go visit the national parks, go look at booking a railway trip with Via Rail, and the discounts are automatically applied. There's no special card, there's no special thing you have to do. It's right there, makes it super easy for Canadians to experience what it is and what we have to offer. For many travelers, domestic travel simply feels predictable, manageable, and honestly, a lot easier than trying to do some of these international trips we're seeing right now.
So then what are some of these assumptions that people make about domestic travel that aren't necessarily true?
The biggest assumption we see, both Larissa and I have experienced within our call centers, we've had this call lots, is I'm traveling within Canada, I've got my SASC health card, I'm good to go. Not quite. Being from Canada, we are very privileged to have universal health care. However, that universal healthcare doesn't quite expand the way we often think, where, yep, we're good, I'm from Saskatchewan, it's the same thing in every province. Not quite. Each province is able to set and direct some of the benefits that they want included within their provincial coverage. Coverage within Saskatchewan will look different than coverage within Alberta, will look different from coverage within Ontario. So you always still want to have coverage when you're visiting other provinces. And even when we do have coverage for inpatient care or emergency medical services, there's even things at home that we still don't have coverage with our Saskatchewan health coverage. The big one being ambulance rides, air ambulance rides. A lot of individuals want to go visit Banff and let's go try skiing for the first time or snowboarding for the first time. I can attest, I don't ski because I've nearly broken my legs the two times I have gone. and an air ambulance ride off a mountain to get to the nearest hospital is extremely expensive, thousands of dollars. So do you want to take that risk? Yes, it's in our own backyard. Yes, it's in Canadian dollars, but there are fees and expenses that are often not covered by provincial healthcare coverage that we don't often think about. The big one, obviously, we're used to is when you leave Canada, there are exclusions or expenses that aren't covered. And there are some coverage available by Sask Health, where we will pay up to $100 per day for inpatient emergency visits and up to $50 per day for outpatient emergency visits. However, that doesn't go very far. For anyone who's experienced a medical emergency in any province, any country outside of Canada, those medical bills can range up to the hundreds of thousands of dollars for even just a few days stay. We are extremely privileged to have our universal healthcare coverage, but we often get blinded to there are things that would be impacted if I don't get extra coverage.
So while domestic travel is growing, international travel hasn't disappeared. People still want to go away. People still want those hot holidays. But apparently this international travel behavior is changing. Amanda, how has this changed so far?
We're seeing the shift away from the States. We're seeing more input into Canada. But let's be honest, in the middle of winter, even Vancouver or the Maritimes still aren't that warm. So we still want to go somewhere where we can relax, we can dust off the frost, try and experience what else is out there for the world. What we're seeing in 2026 is not necessarily a change in where they're going, but how individuals are approaching international travel. There are individuals who are going less often, as I mentioned, because those trips are big trips and large expenses. But when they do go and pick their destination, they're finding places that add more meaning to their experience. We're seeing individuals go to fewer destinations. They want to really experience what it is that they're going to see, and they're slowing down. They're finding a more intentional pace, allowing themselves to be immersed in the culture, see what there is to offer. So instead of trying to get there, do everything in Europe all at once, they're picking one location and being intentional on what they want to experience so that it feels truly momentous, memorable, and worth it. There is a downward shift in US travel. We're seeing that trend shift away, but trips overseas are actually rising up to 9 to 12% year over year. It's not that we've stopped our international travel, it's just we're being more selective on where we want to go.
You know, something that you said there, intentional. I really love the idea of purpose and intention. What's driving that more intentional approach for travel?
So there are actually two key drivers that we're seeing: value and experience. They want to pair them together instead of trying to get the best deal. There's an actual balance that's starting to be created between the two to make it worthwhile and feel that you're actually enjoying and being a part of that experience. With the airfare volatility and the currency pressure that we're seeing, travelers are paying closer attention to where their money goes. Previously, yes, with the States, we had a relatively closed dollar, so you kind of knew that exchange. But when you're going international, our dollar does fluctuate depending on where you go. So try to pick destinations that prioritize an emotional value, a story-rich experience, somewhere that provide that wellness or nature immersion that we don't necessarily experience here or might be different than what we experience here. When you go international, the food, the culture, it's so enriching that you want to just immerse yourself and learn all you can. And then put that personal and identity basis on your journeys. So you don't want to just do the cookie cutter, take it off the shelf. You know, here's the offer provided by those travel agencies. You want something that makes it more meaningful for you to make it more worthwhile. Because let's face it, these trips are expensive. So why not make it what you want it to be? When these trips are more meaningful, the emotional stakes are higher. Disruptions feel more impactful because this was your dream trip that you were planning. Planning and protection becomes part of the experience, not necessarily an afterthought that individuals take into account.
Now, one thing that a lot of people talk about with travel is, you know, preparations and planning and getting ready for this monumental trip that they get to be a part of. And it's such a huge moment. Now we're starting to see new tools showing up And Larissa, I'm wondering, AI, it's out there, everyone's using it,
yep.
And we're seeing AI with travel. So how is that influencing how Canadians are planning their travel?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm glad you ask it. I mean, can we leave a conversation these days without AI being on the fringes? I mean, if we didn't talk about it, I feel like it's just an elephant in the room, because it is everywhere and travel is no exception. Even in the Blue Cross travel study, it indicates that nearly 50% of travelers are utilizing artificial intelligence to some degree, some capacity to plan, itinerize, organize, budget their trip. Probably no surprise that number is higher amongst your millennial and Gen Z. Even Booking.com, it indicates that 65% of people are really okay with using AI to help plan and organize their trip. But there has been a couple of changes in recent years. We got introduced to generative AI, which works a lot like a search engine that you're just speaking to, basically. Works very conversational. The internet's been around for how many years, right? Every day, every moment, every hour, there is more and more stuff put out there. There's sponsored ads. Sometimes you just need to cut through that, right? And you need a little bit of a structure and a scaffolding to get you started. You don't necessarily want like endless lists or Google searches to go through. So it can be a really nice starting point for helping reduce search and decision fatigue. But there is a bit of an interesting switch that we've been seeing towards the end of 2025 and most certainly moving into 2026 this year, and have no doubt that this technology will take off as the reports are indicating. The shift towards agentic AI. So these aren't just tools that suggest for us, but they actually act on our behalf like a full-on assistance, not just, hey, give me some ideas, but now actually go ahead and search for my flights, my accommodations, compare my airfare with my loyalty options that may be included. Heck, AI is becoming strong enough to book itineraries or even rebook automatically. We're already seeing this play through in major platforms. This isn't just something we're talking about far out in the future. Expedia is already working in integrating OpenAI Operator, as well as some Microsoft Copilot features to allow individuals and travelers to put in these really simple prompts. Think something as simple as, find me a warm 3-day getaway for under $1,000. And in a couple of moments, it'll pump them out a fully assembled itinerary. Very, very cool. Very slick. I like tools like these, but you've got to be a little bit cautious with AI.
So being cautious with AI, where should travelers be cautious?
That's a great question. And I think when we're talking not only in regards to travel, but anything we might be using these innovative tools with, is that yes, AI is powerful, but it's not perfect. It's excellent, as I said, for maybe some of those starting off points to gather some framework ideas, maybe to help with a little bit of budgeting. But it's important to note that it's imperfect, it's a new technology, and it's really quite unreliable for more nuanced or real-time conditions. So even when I hear things about automatically rebooking your flight, I get a little, that might be something I still want to click okay, approve, or it's like Google Maps, right? Give me the best route. It's the quickest route, but it's not ideal. It doesn't know you're going through a bunch of back roads or all the complexities that could still happen. AI absolutely needs human judgment. We've got to verify things. When we're talking about travel here, I always like to think of AI a bit of like the co-pilot, but you are still the pilot. You are the person taking the trip. You are the one that are going to have to deal with the errors that come about. There's a really good example of an individual who is trying to plan a route for a dog show that they were going on, and they were using Google Gemini to fully assemble their routes, their stops, generate fuel mileage and their timing assumption. It was a mess. It generated all the check stops in the restaurants on the opposite side of the roads and the interstates, completely inaccurate fuel mileage. The timing was completely off. As I said, this is scaffolding. Use that human discretion and that oversight. These tools are there to help us make things easier, curate that trip, or explore some detour destinations or trips off the beaten path if we are looking to maybe have different curated experiences for ourselves. But let it be a guide and a support. Don't let it be the end all be all, or you're going to end up with a trip that is totally not what you were expecting and disconnected from yourself and the experience.
You know, you're saying AI is the co-pilot, you're the pilot. That's why, you know, as humans, we're the ones who are holding the passport. So you got to make sure that you're still in control of things.
Yeah, you said it, Lindsay.
One theme that I keep hearing, both from yourself, Larissa, as well as you, Amanda, is connection. And a lot of people are looking for those really meaningful trips. What are people really traveling for right now?
Connection is the big theme that we're starting to see year over year. They want something that they can truly connect with. Now, using AI to help come up with ideas, off beaten paths, trying to find something that's more meaningful, something that you wouldn't typically do on a trip, because you don't want the same old experience that you're seeing everybody else do, or the typical getaway. So what we're seeing is slower travel, fewer checklists, trying to make every moment more meaningful, to experience nature immersions, trying to find artisan workshops, you know, the one-off thing, something more unique, more different, something cultural or ancestry focused. And often we're seeing actually a really big boom in the small towns and the rural stays. They want those quirky, kind of unique experiences that you often find in the small town. I remember everybody, you know, loved when Dog River came about with Quarter Gas, because it truly amplified what's there as a unique one-off scenario. And Rollo actually boomed as a city because they had everybody coming. Expedia's highlighting more of these unique experiences with motivations like detour destinations. A lot of these typical tourist locations are starting to see a large rise in tourists coming to visit. With the introduction of AI, travelers are trying to find, what is it an off time? When would it be cheapest to go to help make my budget stretch further? And part of that is also, where is a one-off place I can go that's not the typical destination? So a lot of these smaller towns or rural areas are starting to see a rise in tourism, and a lot of the bigger city facilities or centers are starting to also see a shift in when is the prime time to go. They're trying to adapt to try and make it more of a balance. One of the other things we're starting to see is what's called JOMO, the joy of missing out. Yeah. So instead of a fear of missing out, there's a shift of actually intentionally missing out. I've got a trip coming up that I'm starting to hear talks of turning off the cell phone, leaving the cell phone at home. Don't have to recommend that in case you've got all of your itinerary on it, but trying to fully actually take a pause and disconnect. And you know what? Maybe I want to sit on a beach and read a book for a week. Maybe I want to just slowly walk through the jungle and see what's there instead of trying to get to the next destination, trying to get to the next activity that I've got jam-packed in. All of these memories aren't made by shoving it all together. They're made by intentionally slowing down and taking in the atmosphere that you're in. Looking to also find the curated, easy-to-book experiences. Yes, a lot of these places are kind of the one-off beaten path or unique things to find, but with that comes the challenges of trying to actually book anything. I've got a trip coming up, and I'm starting to learn Mexico, they don't have websites all over the place often to find things. We're trying to find unique activities to do or off-beaten activities, and there's no websites to look up. There's nothing to find. Reddit searches become a really big hit on where can I find information? And yes, AI comes in to say, hey, did you know there's an aquarium right behind your hotel that maybe you want to take the kids to go look
at? There you go.
There's no website. I just found it through that way. So it's using all these tools and your judgment to say, okay, there may or may not be an aquarium behind me. I'll find it when I get there. But I'm going to make sure that I don't put that as my primary purpose, so that I have that flexibility to adjust what I might need and still make it a true, meaningful experience. The intergenerational trips are starting to become a rise as well. So all these shared experiences, we're trying to find ways to make it more meaningful for us that opens it up to not just the one-on-one experiences that we might have. Some individuals do like to go to have their getaway. We're seeing a rise on solo trips as well. But surprisingly, we're also seeing a rise on that multi-generational trips.
You're traveling with kids and extended family, Amanda, with that next trip that you were talking about, what does that trip look like for you?
Things are a little interesting when you're trying to manage and juggle between two kids, two adults, and two seniors. How do we make this meaningful for all of us? Not necessarily just the typical things, check off the bucket list, the touristy attractions. So planning starts to become a little more complex. There's different levels of energy or needs that are seen with these different generations. For example, my kids are outside of the ages of having naps. So, okay, we don't have to plan in naps, but my mom has both knees are very degenerated and she has a hard time walking long distances. Well, for our trip to Mexico, we're looking at going along the Malecón, which is a large boardwalk, and long walks for her are hard. So how do we find ways that we can maybe stop at this restaurant or check out this tourist spot? Or if we are planning something with long walks, making sure that there are benches to sit down and have breaks. Not only for her, but I'm sure the kids, I will be hearing about it, about the whining of, I'm tired, can I sit?
Probably more, actually.
Exactly. So there's levels of complexity that come into trying to fit travel needs for more than just a standard or single individual. So what we're trying to see is flexibility becoming the essential component of these trips. Intentionally planning in down days or frequent stops throughout. That doesn't mean you're going to frequent locations. It just means you're slowing down to take in and have those moments to experience. So what people are finding that they're more involved in is joy becomes amplified and stress starts to become amplified because how do I coordinate all this but still experience the joy that comes along with having grandma and grandpa hang out with their grandkids on the beach in Mexico? Disruptions affect everybody. And that's why we're actually starting to see a rise in trip cancellation and interruption coverage to cover those experiences. You want to make sure that if this is that one-time bucket trip while grandma and grandpa are still alive or still able to travel, it makes it meaningful for everybody. So protecting that investment that you're looking to enjoy is becoming a strong component that we want to make sure is incorporated into our travel so we don't miss out on those wonderful experiences and get frustrated instead by, now what do we do when we're delayed a day or two and we can't get home and we have to coordinate everything else we had planned?
Well, there's obviously a lot of new dynamics that are coming into travel for 2026. One of the other ones too is the volatility, because seeing some changes when it comes to air travel, when it comes to protections and comfort levels, things like that. What does that mean for today's travelers, Larissa?
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the system strain and even the volatility and the uncertainty that just exists for travelers here today. And to dive into that a little bit further and what that is actually looking like and panning out to be, one of the big ones we experience here in Saskatchewan is frequently disrupted routes, common flight paths that we're used to. Saskatchewan is a smaller population. We don't have an international airport. So of course, we're going to be a market that is affected a little bit more. But I mean, this isn't even happening just in Saskatchewan anymore. There's route changes now, just due to a lot of these changes in our environment, the decline that we've seen over the last couple of years of travelers wanting to go to the United States, that is causing flights between Canada, US routes, those typical ones that we see, are now being rerouted in favor for domestic routes, also being directed to Europe in Asian markets that are seeing year-over-year growth. Also being redirected to those sun markets. Because as we mentioned, people aren't stopping travel, they're just redirecting. And that has a disruption in how we travel or what we experience. For those who may be taking some of those trips to United States from Canadian to US, they're probably gonna have less nonstop options and fuller flights just because the availability isn't there anymore. It's simple supply and demand, right? There's also labor disruptions and the ripple effect it has across different regions, countries, or globally. This isn't something we've talked a lot about, but it's been coming up here in Canada. There's been significant strikes over in Europe. One recent one, it was reported by Euro Air Traffic in France that one labor dispute affected over 1 million flights and travelers across Europe, just because of the intersections and the transfers across that main French airspace and that airport. So these disruptions and ripple effects are happening everywhere. And it's just causing people to plan their trips a little bit different. Like I think of, I've had a lot of family travel to and from Canada recently. We've got some family in the United States. The amount of buffer time these people are planning now for weddings, for upcoming funerals or family events that are going on, because flights get pulled. And then all of a sudden, if you only have 12 hours between when you're getting on that plane and the event, there's probably a high likelihood you're going to miss something. And we have had family members miss weddings to show up at 3 a.m. for cleanup crew, basically, right? Like these things are happening. And of course, we cannot forget to mention weather disruptions. Weather is becoming more severe, more turbulent across the globe. Here in Saskatchewan, cold temperatures that can completely derail or cancel flights in regions. Again, not for just a number of hours, it's a number of days.
I seem to recall, didn't you have a weather situation that ended up actually costing you?
Lindsay, I'm always hesitant to bring this up, being someone who's worked coming close to a decade in insurance. But yes, let this be this little lesson for everyone here. Me and my partner, we were taking our 5-year wedding anniversary trip. We're going back to Puerto Vallarta, working with an insurance. I knew we got trip cancellation interruption, right? I take it to my spouse. I'm like, hey, trip is costing us X amount of dollars that we know about. It's going to cost us under $150 for cancellation interruption coverage. What do you think? Me being a little risk adverse, I mean, this is who I am. This is what I work in. And him just being completely opposite side of the spectrum. It's like, no, we've traveled for over a decade, right? Like nothing's gone wrong. Like it's fine. Okay, whatever. Sure enough, it was one of those minus 50 degree weeks in January. We were just about to pick up the phone to call an Uber and we got the notification that our flight back home was canceled due to extreme cold. Wasn't just our flight, it was all WestJet's flights across Western Canada. There was absolutely no way to get home for at least 3 days. We had just checked out of our Airbnb, had no Mexican money left or anything. I remember sitting there with my husband on the phone with our parents and trying to find flights home. And my husband was just like, huh, maybe we should have opted for that cancellation interruption coverage. And I was like, this is easily costing us well over $2,000 in accommodations, in food, in transportation, a portion of which would have been covered by trip interruption coverage. Instead of paying $140 or so that it was well over $2,000 out of pocket for 3 days. Whenever I like approach insurance with my husband, he's always come at it from this pessimistic perspective. And I'm here to tell you, like, honey, this is about the inconvenience of disruption and the cost that it can essentially have. So big learning lesson for us. We ask better questions now when we travel. We look into things a little bit different and we just have this lived experience that, I mean, hey, we can share it all with you here. These are real life things that happen and real life things that we need to take into consideration in today's day and age, because they can, will, and do unfortunately often happen.
Don't worry, Lindsay, you can bet that I have purchased our trip cancellation interruption coverage. We are not having a Larissa experience for our trip coming up.
You said that exactly. We're not having a Larissa experience. So good on you.
Well, you know, lessons are important. And if Larissa, your story didn't teach us anything, let it be known that being prepared matters, especially when it comes to travel insurance and knowing what you're getting yourself into. And, you know, travel, it hasn't become riskier. It's just a little different, you know, especially with extreme weather patterns that could stop all flights for 3 days. But Canadians were still exploring, just with a little more intention, a little more awareness, and a little more preparation. So glad to hear, Amanda, that you have your coverage ready to go. Now, all resources that we've referenced today are linked. I want to thank you once again, Larissa and Amanda, for being a part of Blueprint to Benefits. Until next time, plan with purpose, protect that experience, and go confidently.